Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Welcome back. This is another edition of For the Love of the Game. This is your host, Nick Andre. Once again, thank you guys for tuning in. Hope everyone had a really great weekend as we start the new week. Hopefully you guys have some big goals in set as far as accomplishing new things, as far as, you know, just trying to better yourself every single day. For me, I'm feeling a lot better. Sorry for the last few episodes, man. I'll be honest. I was going through hell the last week, you know, dealing with the sickness, you know, losing my voice in the middle of the week. Actually, I lost my voice Monday last weekend. Even when I was doing episodes, you know, you could just tell the difference in my voice. And it was a struggle, man, because I'm the type of guy, like, I don't really get sick a lot. But when I do get sick, it's probably like 2-3 days tops. And then I'll probably say by like day four, I'm good to go and I'm back, you know, feeling normal. But this one took a while. I don't know exactly what I had. I had a few of my friends tell me I had COVID. I was like, I don't believe I have COVID. I think it's just kind of like a cold or whatever. But thank God, you know, thank God I'm okay now. And I'm feeling a lot better. I'm feeling a lot stronger. You know, my voice is halfway decent, halfway back in a way. You know, I still can't, you know, really whistle or anything. But, you know, I'm, like I say, you know, I'm feeling a lot better now. And, you know, I'm just happy, you know, to be back 100%, you know, like I once was. So, but with that being said, you know, we got a lot to talk about. You know, there's a lot of things that went down over the weekend. Y'all let me know, too, for all the hip-hop fans, you know, who y'all got in this rap beef right now? Y'all have Drake or y'all have Kendrick Lamar? Because it's been just phenomenal just watching these two go back and forth. I'm a hip-hop historian. I'm a hip-hop head, for those who know me. So I've been enjoying every second of this. I'm not going to tell you guys who I believe is winning, because I'm kind of neutral, because I'm a fan of both of them. So I just love the competition at the end of the day, man. You know, both of them are showing no mercy. You know, it's definitely, you know, we're getting the best out of both of them. And honestly, I don't see this stopping anytime soon. But without further ado, man, let's just go ahead and talk about basketball, man. You know, this is a topic that I should have discussed a little while ago. You know, this isn't necessarily like new information or new news that just broke, but I just wanted to talk about it. We have two black female head coaches who are now making new moves. First, we'll start with head coach Tamika Reed, who just recently accepted a job at Charlotte. For those who know her, she coached 6 seasons at Jackson State, won 5 SWAC regular season championships, 3 SWAC tournament championships. She was a 4-time SWAC coach of the year, and even this past season was just incredible. You know, they pretty much dominated the conference, went 18-0 in the conference, went 26-7. Like, even for me, I went back this weekend to watch a couple games, and man, that team is really good. Because, and I'll be honest, I didn't watch as much SWAC games that I should have. You know, I watched a few games for Alcorn State. I watched a few games for Alabama A&M. I watched a few games for obviously Jackson State, and then of course Florida A&M. But I'll be real and say that I wasn't as locked in with them as I should have. And you know, as I've been able to go back and watch games over the weekend, I highly regret it, because it was really great basketball. And I would highly advise for people who may not be familiar with HBCU programs or HBCU conferences to definitely tune in and just, you know, definitely invest into it, because it's really good hoops there. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of great programs there and a lot of great coaches that are definitely, you know, doing a thing there. And Tamika Reed was one of them. Actually, before she accepted the job at Charlotte, she had initially re-signed to become Jackson State's head coach again for, you know, heading into her 6th season. But I think maybe a week or two weeks after that, she took the job. And when I first found out, I was highly confused. I was like, did she just re-sign as Jackson State head coach? But, you know, new opportunities. And, you know, like I said, you know, Tamika Reed has done such a phenomenal job over the past few years, really elevating this program. I mean, they made 3 NCAA tournament appearances in the last 4 seasons, you know, which is incredible. And even when they made it this past year, when they played UConn, I mean, I know UConn ended up running away with the victory, but it was a really competitive game. And they had a lot of competitive games, you know, against a lot of top tier programs. I mean, they played Mississippi State earlier this year in non-conference play, and they were able to really keep that thing competitive. I know they got blown out to teams like Miami and others, but, you know, this is a team that, you know, Tamika Reed really, you know, did a good job as far as coaching and just really, you know, keeping this team in competition. And, you know, with me going back, watching a few of her interviews, you know, she is an excellent coach that a lot of players should want to play for. You know, she She demands excellence. You know, she's not going to allow you to be average. She's not going to allow you to half-ass anything. You know, she looks to get 100% from her players. And I think as a leader and a coach, you know, that's why it's so dope for her, because she gives 100% anytime she steps on the floor, anytime she's on the sideline. So, and, you know, you look at the elevation of a lot of players that play for her. Angel Jackson, who is now in the W for the Las Vegas Aces, you know, with the season that she just had, you know, winning the conference defensive player of the year. And then, of course, she's really gifted offensively as well. Adriana Vent, you know, who led this team in scoring, you know, who was really good. Tylan Bowler, who one of my personal favorites, you know, on this team, you know, just watching how she played. Maya Crump, and then, of course, Haley Breelands, you know, like, they had a really great team this past year. And, you know, it's a part of the reason why they just dominated the SWAC conference. And, you know, now with Coach Reed, you know, taking this job at Charlotte, you know, this is actually a pretty good Charlotte team. Made the tournament, I want to say, a few years ago. And then, of course, you know, was highlighted with one of my personal favorite players, Deja Lawrence. By the way, shout out to Deja Lawrence for now transferring. She's now a Kentucky Wildcat. You know, I definitely wish her the best on her new endeavors, and I can't wait to see, you know, what she does with Kenny Brooks this upcoming season. But back to Tamika Reed, you know, just – one thing that I'll say is that, you know, she really knows how to build a program, and she knows how to build a really good atmosphere. So I'm really excited to see, you know, like, what's next for her in this new start with Charlotte moving forward. And another coach that we could talk about is another SWAC coach, which is Coach Don Thornton. For those who may not know about her, coached 5 seasons at Arkansas Pine Bluff. This past year was pretty decent with 17-16. They went 12-7 in SWAC play, which is top 5 in the conference. You know, notable player like Zay Green ended up playing for her, which, by the way, for those who don't know her, you should definitely go check out her highlights, but she's a really good player. She just committed to Alabama. And go watch her even before that, even at UAPB and when she played for Tennessee. So definitely look out, definitely go check out her highlights. But Dawn is exceptional as well. You know, she's definitely exceptional. You know, I've had a chance, you know, to be able to go back and watch a lot of her old interviews and a lot of her old games. You know, just how she's able to coach, just how she's able to be a leader on the sideline as well. It's just incredible. And since she's gotten to Alabama A&M, she's went to work. Like, she immediately got to work, man. And she's recruited so many players, so many great players. You know, definitely players like Alicia Wilson and Dariah Bergen, you know, who were in the portal that ended up deciding to stay once Don ended up accepting a coaching job. And then she, like, she's been killing it in the portal. Like, she's gotten, like, at least, like, I don't know exactly how many players that she's gotten, but she's gotten a lot of, you know, new players. Just a few, like, to list. Shalomi Sanders, who is Deion Sanders' daughter, Tia Harvey, Maori Davenport, Kalia Walker, Lauren Pendleton, Marilyn Wilkerson, and I think that's not even all of them, honestly. I mean, those are just to name a few. So, and Alabama A&M, you know, they've been a pretty good program, you know, I mean, with the front office, you know, and everything there, you know, I think they've really done a good job as far as building a culture there as well. So I'm excited for this new start for Dawn as well. You know, I mean, like I say, you know, she's definitely gotten to work, you know, since she has accepted a job, and she's looking forward to, you know, continuing to build this program. And then, of course, you know, putting them in a winning culture. So I'm just excited for both of these coaches. You know, Tamika Reed and Don Thornton, you know, they're definitely highly respected as coaches, you know, in HBCU, and as they go down the new endeavors, you know, I wish them the best moving forward. Switching gears to the next topic, this is just such a wonderful time of the year. Obviously the playoffs are going on, and we're definitely going to dive into that a little later, but the WNBA preseason has begun, and I'm excited, and I'm also not excited, and I'm gonna tell y'all why I'm not excited, because we've gone, so the last W game before this preseason was in October, game 4 of the WNBA Finals between the Las Vegas Aces and the New York Liberty. So fans like myself, we have been dying to watch a lot of our favorite teams, a lot of our favorite players, just be able to step out on the court. And I know preseason is exhibition, and I know that it doesn't mean anything, but still, it's still a game that you can watch. You know, you can still watch, you know, your new team, watch, or not your new team, you know, your new players on your new on your team, you know, just watch how, you know, how things are working, how things are not working. You know, that's pretty much what the preseason is for. But, you know, it's hard to do that whenever the league is not telecasting games. And I know that they put out a statement, or I want to say they did put out a statement saying that, you know, a lot of it's out of their control. You know, I think there's something with them at Bally Sports that's not allowing them to televise preseason games. And right now, the only ones that we've gotten so far are the first game, which was the Indiana Fever and Dallas Wings, and then the Canada game between the Seattle Storm and Los Angeles Sparks. You know, two really good games, two really good games, but I think we're missing out on just so many other great games. Like, even for instance, like the Chicago Sky and the Minnesota Lynx played on Friday, and shout out to the young lady who pretty much live streamed the game from her phone, and she had like at least, I think, about a million people that were watching. So that shows you, like, hey, like, we want to watch these games. And this, I'll be real, this has been something that's been sitting on my mind pretty much all weekend, because I'm a fan. You know, I mean, I know that I do this for a job, but, you know, I'm still a fan at the end of the day too. And I've been looking forward to being able to watch these games. So, and it's crazy too, because Wednesday or Thursday, I was looking through the schedule, and I was looking at, you know, the schedule on my WNBA app, and I was looking at, they were saying, this is going to be a league pass. And I was like, okay, cool. We're finally going to be able to see some games. Cool. That sounds good to me. Hell yeah. And then once the day of the preseason games begin, nowhere to be found. And I was highly disappointed. Obviously, I'm going to keep up with the score on my phone, but it's just different when you're actually able to watch the game. And I hope that's something that the W can just find a way to be better at, or just find a way to figure out. Because, and I know that, like I said, I know preseason games are not as important as regular season games or even playoff games, but I mean, fans still want to watch, especially if you're really a lover of this game of basketball. Like, you still want to watch, you know, a lot of the best players playing a preseason game. So that's just something to keep in mind. But just dissecting a few of them, obviously, I talked about the Dallas Wings against the Indiana Fever, which is Caitlin Clark's technical W debut. I don't really consider it a debut, because I consider debuts like regular season games. A lot of people, they consider them preseason games. I don't really consider it, but at the end of the day, it is technically her first game in an Indiana Fever uniform. Did pretty well, honestly. 21 points, shot 6 of 15 from the floor, 3 rebounds and 2 steals. I thought she was really good with the ball in her hands, you know, being able to play make, you know, being able to dissect the defense. And of course, you know, her perimeter shooting is just out of this world. But then also, there was a lot of possessions where she played off ball, and I love that. I saw people, you know, on my ex timeline, they weren't really too happy about it, but I'm honestly a fan of it. And people got to realize that, you know, what's going to happen with Indiana. Not saying that Caitlin Clark's not going to dominate, because I think Caitlin Clark's going to be really good with this team, but people should not expect this to be like what it was at Iowa, to where like she just had the ball in her hands 24/7 and she was making plays. Now, she's definitely going to do that, but she has also other great playmakers as well who can create and get their own shot. Kelsey Mitchell, Erica Wheeler, and then other players as well. So, you know, there's going to be some possessions where Caitlin does not have to have the ball in her hands to be effective. And that's the thing too, because Caitlin's actually a really good off-ball player too. I just don't think a lot of people really notice it, because at Iowa, she had the ball in her hands literally almost every possession. So for her to be able to play off ball a little bit in this preseason matchup was really fun to watch. And I think that she really did a good job, you know, being able to play off the ball. But, you know, this first game, even though Dallas ended up winning the game, you know, shout out to Arike for hitting that clutch three-pointer down the stretch. Even though they did lose this game, I'll just be real, Indiana's going to be a fun team to watch this year. I think the ceiling has to be playoffs. I think it's possible. I know that they're young. I know that they're a little bit inexperienced, but I personally believe that that they can make the playoffs. I mean, I'm not saying that they're going to be like one of the top 5 or 6 seeds, but somehow, some way, that 7-8 slot is possible, honestly, especially depending on how well this year is for them. But Caitlin Clark's going to be amazing this year. Aaliyah Boston's going to be amazing this year. Nelissa Smith, you know, who many people are not really talking about enough, she's going to be great this year too. I mean, she had a really good game in this preseason game as well. I think she had about 20-21 points. So she's going to be really good too. Like, Indiana is just a really talented team from top to bottom. And I think people have to recognize that. And that's why, I mean, obviously with Caitlin Clark, you mean that automatically elevates a team. But this might be some of the best talent that Caitlin has probably ever played with, you know, honestly. So I'm really looking excited. I'm really excited to see, you know, what this team can do. And, you know, like I said, I'm really high on them, you know, as the season does come about. Another game we'd talk about is the Canada game between the Seattle Storm and the Los Angeles Sparks. Let me just say this. Skylar Diggins-Smith is back. Skylar Diggins-Smith is back, man. I'm so excited, man. It's been, what, about almost 2 years since her last technical W game. And obviously, she wasn't 100% in this game. You know, obviously, you know, with it being well over a year since her last W game, you know, you're not expecting her to be sharp. You know, I think that there was a lot of times, you know, where she was a little bit rusty on both ends of the floor, but she did make some good defensive stops. She did make some great offensive plays as well. So she's just showing us how wonderful of a player she is and why people are fans, because at the end of the day, you know, she is like, Skylar is a dog. Skylar is a dog on both ends of the floor. She is like one of the more elite competitors that this league has ever seen, and she's going to figure it out. And it kind of brings me to this debate that I have, you know, is Skylar Diggins-Smith and Jewel Loyd going to be the best backcourt in the WNBA this season? I honestly say yes. I'm not going to lie. And I know that there is a mean backcourt duo in Las Vegas with Chelsea Gray and Kelsey Plum. And don't get me wrong. I mean, of course, they're probably going to get the nod because they're champions. You know, they got two titles together and they're both just spectacular, especially with Chelsea Gray. Like Chelsea Gray, I think if you ask me, the two best point guards in the W got to be either Chelsea Gray or Skylar Diggins-Smith. I mean, you can pick or choose. I don't even think there's a wrong answer, you know, when it comes to that. But honestly, Jewel, and me just watching Jewel in that preseason game, Jewel is the best scorer in the W. She's the best scorer. And I mean, obviously she's shown that throughout the years. Obviously last year leading the league in scoring, but it's just, I don't know, it just comes so effortless for Jewel Loyd, you know, like being able to pick her spots, being able to knock down three pointers, being able to attack the basket. Like she's just so smooth with it. And it's just so effortless whenever she puts the ball in the basket. Like, it's just incredible. And then we didn't even talk about Neko Gumike as well, you know, who is going to be a huge asset to this team. So, you know, Seattle's going to be really good. And then, of course, on the other side, you have the LA Sparks. And they had a really good showing. You know, De'Aaron Hamby had a really good game. I thought other players had a really, really good game as well. But, and, you know, I've been high on the Sparks. I believe that the ceiling can be playoffs for them as well. I'm not guaranteeing that they can make the playoffs, but I think that it is possible for this team to make the playoffs. But the one thing that I saw is I think they're really lacking a true playmaker. They're really lacking a true playmaker. Now, they have great guards. They have Laysia Clarendon. They have Lexi Brown. They have Ari McDonald. So they have really great guards, but I don't think they have really an elite playmaker, somebody who can dictate the offense and who really can run plays, you know, on the floor in their half-court offense. And I think we saw that, you know, they had like 17 turnovers or something like that, which is just crazy. And this is why the preseason is important. You know what I'm saying? This is exactly why the preseason is important, because you look at your flaws, you're able to look at them and say, you know what, we need to fix this, or we need to figure this out before the regular season begins. So, and give credit to the Sparks. I still think that they had a really good showing. I mean, Cameron Brink was really good. You know, she had a huge block in that game. Rekia Jackson came off the bench. You know, she had some good moments as well. She had a one-legged fader almost looking like Dirk Nowitzki out there, which was crazy. Man, I'm just going to be real. Rekia Jackson is, like, that's probably my favorite player in the draft. Like, I am so excited to see what she's just going to be able to do this season as a rookie. You know, I was on another podcast, and they were asking me who I believe is going to win Rookie of the Year. I say Caitlin Clark's probably going to get it, but Rekia Jackson is right there. I think she's going to be right there on the hunt for it. So that's just something to keep in mind as well. But, I mean, but back to the Sparks, you know, like definitely a playmaker is definitely needed on this team, a real true playmaker. And I think that there's some people out there on the table that can possibly fill that role. Like, and if you follow me on X, you've seen me tweet this a few times. Odyssey Sims is not on a team. And this is a key veteran who last year played a huge role for the Dallas Wings, especially in that second unit, you know, being able to run the offense and just be able to do a multitude of things on that end of the floor. And especially with the Sparks team, who has a mixture of great young talent and key veterans who have won at a high level, why not grab a player like Odyssey Sims? Now, look, you don't have to start her. I don't believe that she has to be a starter. I mean, she's shown that she can be elite in the second unit and really run things, but I think that's something that they definitely lack. They have a multitude of great things, but I think that's something that they really need to get is a true playmaker. But besides that, I mean, the Sparks are really good. The Seattle Storm is really good. This is a really good game as well. Minnesota plays Chicago. Like I mentioned earlier, I didn't get to watch the game, but I heard good things. I heard good things out of Camilo Cardoso. I heard good things from Angel Reese. I think Nafisa Collier has some good moments as well. Minnesota is another team that people need to look out for because I think they had a really good offseason, you know, acquiring players like Courtney Williams and Atlanta Smith. You know, obviously, Fee had a MVP caliber season last year. I thought Diamond Miller was spectacular. Dorka Juhas was really spectacular as well. And I think they're only going to capitalize it. And it's really good to see, you know, how they've been able to really elevate as a team, especially after Sylvia Fowles retirement a few years ago. So, you know, Minnesota's a team that people need to look out for as well. I don't know how high people are on them. Now, I'm not expecting them to be like a top tier contender, but they're definitely a team that's probably going to be sitting in that 6-7 slot that, you know, that can possibly make some noise. So, you know, we'll just have to see. And then, of course, Chicago as well, who was on the come up. I talked about Camilo, Angel. I'm going to just go and say it right here. Dana Evans is about to have a good year. Dana Evans is about to kill this year. And I need it, man. I really need it because obviously I'm a Dana fan, so I'm probably biased when I'm speaking on this. But Dana had a really good season last year, especially coming off the bench. She was a sixth player of the year candidate. If you ask me, I believe that she should have won it. And I mean, it's not a knock to Alicia Clark as well, because I think she had a really good year off the bench for the Las Vegas Aces. But Dana Evans now being that starting point guard, almost in a way kind of like a veteran. And it's crazy because, I mean, she's what, year what, three or four? So almost kind of like she's a veteran at this point too, especially with how young this team is. So I'm expecting big things out of Dana Evans this season. Is it all-star caliber? I don't know. But I think that she could possibly be a most improved player candidate depending on what type of season she has, depending on what her statistics look like. And I'm just really excited for her and Chicago as a whole. You know, I know that obviously this is a rebuilding team, so I don't see playoff expectations in them. But, you know, I think that this is a really good move in the right direction. So, you know, overall, great first few days in the W preseason. And obviously we have a few more games to go, still not televised. Actually, take that back. I want to say the next Chicago Sky game will be televised. They actually changed that. So that's going to be really good because we'll finally be able to see Camilo Cardoso and Angel Reese. So, you know, I'm really excited for that. But, guys, we're about a week before the season begins. And I'll be real. I'm mad excited. And I just cannot wait, you know, for everything to unfold this W season because I have a good feeling that this is going to be a really good season.
SeatGeek is a proud sponsor for the love of the game. There are several events getting ready to take place that you don't want to miss. Ticket prices could be a little abnormal. However, if you use code LOVEOFTGBBALL, you can save $20 off your first purchase and be in store for a great night. Again, that's LOVEOFTGBBALL. The code will be at the bottom of the description of this episode, and make sure to support the show by using it. Now, let's get back into the episode.
Before we get out of here, got to talk about the NBA playoffs because the second round matchups are set. And the first round was really fun. The first round was really fun to watch. I mean, I think we had some really high, intense battles between a lot of teams, a lot of matchups in this series. And I think the second round is only going to get better. And I think we saw a small preview of that on Saturday. And we got to dive right into it, man. The Denver Nuggets and the Minnesota Timberwolves has already taken place. Game one is in the books. Minnesota got a huge win on the road, 106-99. The highlight, like, there's really nobody else to talk about but Anthony Edwards. Nobody else to talk about. This man is him. It's just that simple. 43 points, 7 rebounds, 58% shooting. Like, the man was a one-man show in the first half. Like, the man was killing in the first half, pretty much keeping them afloat. He had 20 of the team's first 32 points, I want to say, which is, like, absurd. Like, you know, when you see a player just single-handedly carrying the team like that, you're like, oh, damn, like, it's crazy. Like, they ain't getting no production out of nobody else. Like, you know what I'm saying? The other team is pretty much dominating. But somehow, some way, Minnesota kept themselves in the game. And, you know, we saw in the second half him just, Ant-Man, just continuing to just take over. And it's just his ability to score on the outside, his ability to, you know, get to his spots in the mid-range. Defensively, I thought he was really good as well, had some key moments. And it's crazy because, you know, shout out to my guy Rob, who was on the last episode. We were asking, like, who's going to guard Ant-Man? You know, who is going to defend him on this Nuggets team? Is it going to be KCP, which we definitely did see? Is it going to be MPJ? Are you going to have to put Aaron Gordon on him on a few possessions? And I think every defensive coverage that Denver had for Ant-Man, he capitalized off of it. He killed it every time. So I'm really interested to see how Mike Malone adjusts heading into game two, because if Ant-Man is continuing to be a, like, just dominate like this, and I know that Denver is the defending champs, and I know a lot of people have them winning this series, which they should. I mean, they're the team with the more experience. They got a championship under their belt, so they've been in these situations way more than Minnesota has. This is Minnesota's, what, like, second or third, like, or fourth, take it back. Like, it's probably like their fourth playoff appearance since 20 years ago when Kevin Garnett won MVP in 04. So they got some playoff experience, but it's still little compared to Denver, who has been, even before winning a championship, been to the conference finals, been out of the first round multiple times. This is Minnesota's first time out of the first round in 20 years. So for those who are picking Denver to win the series, you know, can't be mad at you, because obviously this is a team that should be able to get out of this series. But, and I'll be real, even myself, I was thinking, like, you know what, this is going to be a good series, and I think Denver might come out on top, but I don't know, man. I think, man, Minnesota's been good defensively, man. And I got to give credit to Rudy Gobert. You know, Rudy Gobert, I know I'm very harsh on him. You know, Rudy Gobert, I'll just call it what it is. Rudy Gobert, I don't really care for the guy. I'm just going to be real. It is not anything personal. I'm just not really a fan of his style of play. But I got to give credit to what he's been doing defensively this entire postseason. I mean, the first round against Phoenix, he was really good. And even in game one, he was pretty good as well. And Minnesota as a whole, as a team, they've done a really good job. It really, like, I think one thing that I saw a lot of in game one was how they defended that Denver pick and roll, because that was something that gave the Lakers a lot of problems in that series, in the first round series, which is clear, pretty much why they lost. And I think somehow, some way, Minnesota was just able to, you know, really find a way to defend that. And that comes off a film study, you know, that comes off a good coaching. First of all, shout out to Chris Finch for even being out there still coaching after what took place in game four of the Phoenix series with him going down with the injury. So for him to still be on the sidelines, you know, still being able to coach this team is just really incredible. And he understands, you know, what's at stake. You know, that's somebody who that understands what's at stake, and he knows that this team has a chance to do special things in his postseason potentially. But, you know, game two is going to be really interesting, because now Minnesota has a ton of momentum. They went on the road and stole one on their home floor. And that's pretty much, you know, I'll be real, a lot of times when a team gets a first game, or like when a team gets their first road win, you know, that more times than not almost kind of decides the series, you know, because it's really hard to win on the road. And obviously, there's still a chance that Denver can win this series. There's only one game, and, you know, obviously they can come back, you know, and make those adjustments, and of course win game two, tie the series, and then possibly make some noise as the series shifts back to Minnesota. But I think what we're seeing now is, you know, this Minnesota team is really good, and their leader is just like, this is, if he ain't a superstar now, he is a superstar in the making, man. Anthony Edwards, at only 22 years old, and what he's been able to just show us, you know, throughout the years, not even just his postseason, but throughout the years. And he's only gotten better throughout the journey. And I think that's the beauty of it, is just how he's been able to just progress throughout the journey and just really show people like the type of caliber player that he really is and what he can be moving forward. Like I said, he's only 22 years old. So, and people say that you hit your prime around like 26, 27. So it'll be really interesting, you know, to see, you know, what's next for him, you know, throughout the series. Another game we can talk about, shout out to the Cleveland Cavaliers beating Orlando in game seven. And give credit to Orlando. Like, this is a good team. The Orlando Magic are a really good team, man. This is Jamal, I'll be real, Jamal Mosley is one of the best coaches in basketball too. You know, just how he was able to coach this young team, just keep them in competition, because they had a really good first half against Cleveland. I want to say they were up at like 16, 18 points in that first half. But I think what it was just an indication of, I think this team was just a little bit too young, a little bit too inexperienced to really figure out how to close this game. Obviously, they're on the road as well. And give credit to Donovan Mitchell. Donovan Mitchell dominated. I mean, obviously game six had 50 points. Didn't really have a lot of help from his teammates. But now in this game seven, just being able to step up. And I think that's the thing, too, is that, like, we expect this out of Donovan Mitchell. You know, this is the guy. I don't know if he's the oldest guy on the team, but he's definitely a guy that has probably one of the more playoff experience on his team. When you talk about what he was able to do in Utah and then, of course, now in Cleveland. So for him to be able to step up in this game was really, really incredible. You know, had 39 points and 9 rebounds in this matchup. Paolo Banchero on the other side, 38 points and 16 rebounds. That guy is special too. That guy is super special, man. Paolo and Franz, I mean, that's a duo that's like they're gonna be here for a while. They're gonna be here for a while, and they're already making noise in Paolo's second season with the team. But no, I mean, back to Cleveland, you know, I'm really excited, you know, about this win for them. And I pretty much said that, you know, this is probably going to be a series where the home team wins every game. And we saw that Cleveland got the first two games. Orlando got games 3 and 4. Cleveland went back home, won game 5. Orlando won game 6. And now Cleveland ended up winning game 7. But that's why getting home court advantage can be important sometimes, because even though you have your road woes on the road, you can still find a way to come back home and still win games. And that's exactly what they did. But now they got to prepare for another big matchup against Boston, who just beat Miami in 5 games earlier last week. And that's going to be a tough series. That's going to be a really tough series for them. And I feel like every time I've seen those two teams play, it seems like the Celtics have always found a way to get their number in that matchup. And, you know, I really want to see what Cleveland can do. I really want to see what Cleveland can do in that series. If you ask me, I think Boston will probably win in 5. I'll say Boston will probably win in 5, but also who knows at the end of the day, because Boston does have a lot of moments. Even as great and talented as a team that they are, they do have their moments, stretches where they are undisciplined. So maybe Cleveland could take advantage of one of those moments and just be able to capitalize off of it. But that should be a good series, man. But definitely shout out to Cleveland for getting that game 7 win and moving on to the next round. I want to talk about the Mavs and the Thunder and just kind of preview that, because that's going to be a really exciting series to me. OKC swept New Orleans. I'm kind of disappointed in New Orleans, because I expected them to get at least one game. I thought that they could. I think that the team is talented enough to get one win, but at the end of the day, give credit to OKC for taking care of business. I thought that they were locked in on both ends of the floor, obviously led by SGA, led by Jalen Williams. Chet Holmgren had a really good series. Lou Dort had a really good series. Isaiah Joe had a really good series. So they got a lot of great contributions from everybody. And I think that's what's going to help them continue to keep going in the playoffs. It's not even just the play of SGA and other guys. It's just what you're going to get out of your supporting cast. But they also got to face the Dallas Mavericks, who pretty much dominated the last two games of that first round series against the Clippers. And they got some momentum on the side, man. They got some momentum. Kyrie Irving had a crazy second half in game 6. They only had like 2 points at halftime, came back, scored like 28 points in the second half, had 30 points overall to finish the game. And then, of course, Luka had a really strong showing as well. And that's the thing, too, because, like, the Mavericks were able to get out of that series. And I still feel like Luka has had good moments, but I feel like we have not seen dominant Luka. Like, I'm talking about Luka from game 7 in 2022 of the second round against Phoenix. I'm talking about Luka who has given us, like, these crazy triple-double numbers, yo. Like, and I think we're still in store for that, honestly. And I think this series is going to be really good, man, especially, you know, both teams play in a very hostile territory. I mean, obviously, we know the atmosphere in OKC and how electric that can be, but Dallas is also the same way as well. But, you know, obviously the stars will shine, but the series will have to come down to the supporting cast. And I think one thing that Dallas does have, they have a really great supporting cast. You know, Derek Lively has been amazing. Daniel Gafford has been elite, you know, as far as his rim protection. P.J. Washington has been a great asset to the team. Dante Exum has been a great asset as well. Maxi Kleber has been a really good asset as well. So they, like, the Mavericks have a really good supporting cast, and I think they have a supporting cast that has a lot of veteran experience as well. And that may be, honestly, the turning point, you know, as far as for them, you know, possibly winning the series. And if you ask me, I personally have them winning the series in 6 games, and it's not a knock to OKC. I think the OKC has had a really good season, and I definitely believe that they can make this series very competitive and make it interesting. But I think at the end of the day, even though OKC is the one seed, I think they still lack that experience. And I'm going to go with a team that is a little more experienced, which is the Dallas Mavericks, and are clicking on both cylinders. So I think the Mavericks will come out on top. They will make another Conference Finals appearance, which is their second one in the past 3 years. And they'll be waiting on whoever comes out of that Minnesota Endeavor matchup. And then another series before we get out here that I'll preview is the Knicks and the Pacers. That's classic. That is classic, you know, especially for those who are for people who are basketball heads like myself, who love this game so much, who have gone back to be able to watch those elite matchups in the 90s when it was Patrick Ewing, John Starks, Charles Oakley going up against guys like Reggie Miller, Mark Jackson, Dale Davis, or whoever it was in those teams. Excuse me. But now we get kind of another version of that. And obviously the most anticipated matchup is at the point guard slot between Jalen Brunson and Tyrese Halliburton. Jalen Brunson has been electric. He had a really good game 6 against Philly, being able to close out the series. I'm telling y'all, man, Jalen Brunson is a superstar, bro. Like, the way that he was able to close out that series, you know, in that fourth quarter was just amazing to watch. And, you know, that's what, it's like I said before, I mean, that's what superstars do. They're going to put the team on their back, and they're going to find ways to win games. And that's exactly what he did in that game 6. Tyrese Halliburton had a really good series against Milwaukee, you know, really being able to lead the way for them as well. So the point guard matchup is going to be really interesting. And I know that this has been a debate for a little while now. You know, it's sparked a lot of controversy, especially when Wally Zerbia called Tyrese Halliburton a fake all-star just to kind of push his narrative that Jalen Brunson was a better player. Now, look, I mean, pick and choose who you are fans of, you know, it's all based off of your preference. But this is something that I think a lot of people are really looking forward to watch. And I'll be real, man. I mean, when I look at both teams, I mean, obviously Indiana's very talented. I mean, they got great key veterans. I mean, Miles Turner at this point is a veteran. Pascal with his championship and playoff experience. To me, I think New York's going to be the better team. I think that New York is going to be the better team. I think that they're going to win in 5 games. I think that they're better defensively. I think that even though they did have some of their offensive woes, I think that they'll be able to figure that out. This New York team is clicking, man. They're really clicking, man. And honestly, I'm really surprised to see how well they have been playing without Julius Randle. I know that, you know, a lot of Knicks fans, you know, I was having conversations with a lot of Knicks fans, and they were telling me, like, yo, like, Julius' injury might be the best thing for us, because I think that now, you know, the offense will be more free-flowing. I think that, you know, that a lot of guys will be able to step up to the plate, and they've done that. A lot of guys have been stepping up, and Josh Hart has just been amazing throughout the playoffs so far. Mitchell Robinson has had his good moments as well. You know, just overall, like, the team overall has just been amazing. And I think, you know, overall, with them having the better team, I think that that's what's going to help them get out of this series. So if you ask me, I got the Knicks winning in 5 as well. I mean, that could change. Indiana might be able to push it to 6 games, but I'm probably going to bet on 5. And New York fans might as well stand up, man, because I think a conference finals is about to be right around the corner, which is the first one in God knows how long. Probably the last time was when they made the finals in 99. I probably have to go back and check and fact check that. But, man, like, this is going to be this is good times for Knicks fans. This is really good times for Knicks fans. And I'm really excited, you know, to see, you know, what's next. But that's going to wrap this episode, man. Once again, thank you guys for tuning in with me. Love that you guys are always supporting, always appreciative that you guys listen in. This is a long solo episode. We're pushing just about 40 minutes. But, hey, I mean, I had a lot to talk about. And I love being able to come on here to talk to you guys. So make sure to follow the show on X at Love with TG B-Ball. Follow myself and Nick Andre ATR. Subscribe anywhere you listen, Apple, Spotify, iHeart, you name it. And until next time, you guys, deuces.